The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we have something special in store for you. Today, we're going to talk to Tim Rhyme, who is the Director of Communications and Outreach at the Alliance for Natural Health. The ANH is a very important organization for you to know about because it is your organization that represents your right to access therapies and supplements of your choice. And it is a group that stands up for us in Washington and on a statewide level. And in fact, if you go to drhoffman.com, there's a little box where we exhort you to join ANH, or at the very least subscribe to their great newsletter and get information about what's happening on the health front. I get lots of my breaking stories through the Alliance for Natural Health, and so should you. So check it out. And so we're going to do a little potpourri today with Tim. Tim, like yours truly, we both follow events in the field of complementary alternative medicine, and he's hot on the trail of some of the same stories that we bring to you on Intelligent Medicine. So without further ado, here's Tim Rhyme. Tim, thanks very much for joining us.
Dr. Hoffman, I'm thrilled to be here. I really thank you for all of your support and for having me on the show today.
It's my great pleasure. So tell us, first of all, a little bit about ANH. What is the mission statement of ANH? What does ANH do?
Well, ANH is we're a nonprofit advocacy group, and really the primary focus of our organization is to promote sustainable health and freedom of choice in healthcare. And, you know, as I know that you're aware, this is becoming increasingly difficult in our society. We're seeing infringements at the federal level, at the state level, from media, from all of these different policymakers that are increasingly infringing on the rights of citizens and their access to natural and sustainable healthcare practices. So our job is to stand up and protect the rights of citizens to that access.
Okay, now, so some people might ask, well, this is a political organization. Is this a branch of the Tea Party, or is this part of the Greens, the people who are, ultra committed vegans, save the planet? You know, is there a political orientation to ANH?
We do our best to be apolitical. Draw people from all parties. I think that regardless if you're a staunch liberal, a conservative, somewhere in the middle, you care about your health. And, you know, that's what we're about. Now, we are a 501c4, so we do lobbying. I mean, we have a political component in that we are continually monitoring what's going on Capitol Hill. We have an office in Bethesda, and we spend a lot of time on Capitol Hill keeping track of what's going on legislatively. But we don't take a particular party affiliation. We try to walk that fine line down the middle, and really we're all about healthcare, and we're about our constituents, making sure that they have access to those things that unfortunately are being threatened all the time these days.
Well, absolutely. There's lots of infringements, as you say, coming from many different directions, coming from legislative directions, both locally, federally. There's also press misrepresentation of lots of the stories. I know that one of ANH's missions is to do damage control on some of the stories that are widely disseminated, that are erroneous, that put down the supplement industry or the herbal industry, or that sometimes disparage complementary and alternative practitioners of all stripes, not just holistic MDs, but naturopaths, acupuncturists, nutritionally oriented advisors, and so on. And so, ANH is all about upholding the right of people to have access to the healthcare choices that they want to undertake. It's about choice and it's about maintaining diversity in this ever narrowing climate of medical conformism.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and right now, one of the ways that we do that, you know, we're seeing a lot of movement with the FDA right now in terms of some different initiatives that they've undertaken in regards to compounding pharmacies, new nutritional labels. So there's a lot of stuff that we're doing. We, you know, we have a legal department, we have lawyers on staff, and you know, one of the things that, that they're actively involved in is taking a look at some of the new rules that are coming down that are going to affect each and every one of us. Going through those rules with a fine-tooth comb and trying to find the things that, that could impact our constituents both now and in the future.
Well, let's start with the compounding law, because I think a lot of people don't realize that this may have some very serious implications for them. It you talk about this on this month's website, your website constantly being updated with new stories, and also I think you send out an e-letter, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And by the way, for people who want to subscribe to the e-letter, I highly recommend it. And it is F-R-E-E. It is free. Am I not mistaken?
It is 100% free.
Okay, good. So just like our Hoffman Center newsletter, it's offered as a service. Okay, so tell us about the compounding, the new compounding regulations. I mean, it sounds kind of innocuous, and it makes sense because we had this horrible tragedy of these people getting bad drugs from compounding pharmacies that were unscrupulous, and they put contaminated medications into people's spinal cords, treating them with steroids. And this is, a call to action for the government. Get in there, regulate, protect the safety of Americans. But how has this initiative had a negative impact on complementary physicians and their patients?
Well, I mean, I think it's important to sort of understand the history of where this came from. You know, the lab in question, and you mentioned the great tragedy, and it was a great tragedy, was the New England Compounding Center. Back in 2002, the FDA started receiving complaints after five patients, you know, became sick from drugs that had been produced there. So they issue a warning letter. Over the coming 10 years, they issued a series of warning letters as more and more of these complaints came in about the way that this particular compounding center was doing business. They were, you know, they weren't practicing the appropriate safety procedures. They weren't doing the right things. And the FDA did nothing. I mean, they sent out warning letters, but they did not follow up on those warning letters. And so you get to 2012, and you have the incident that, that, you know, 53 people died, 700 people got sick. I mean, it was a very serious incident where, you know, some spinal injections were contaminated with fungal meningitis. So this leads to, you know, Congress, as they will, to step in and rightly so. I mean, you know, when a tragedy like this happens, you know, I mean, that's what the government tries to do, right, is this to step in and make sure that everything's being done the right way. The problem is, you know, they came up with the Drug Quality and Security Act. And so they introduced this legislation that greatly expanded the FDA's powers to regulate compounding pharmacies, despite the fact that the House Energy and Commerce Committee had already concluded that the FDA was at fault for that tragedy that you spoke about. I mean, you know, it wasn't a situation where the law wasn't in place that could protect people. It was the fact that the law wasn't being enforced.
But isn't it always more satisfying for Congress to pass a new law? I mean, you know, like that's what they're in business to do. You know, it's like they're just sitting on their hands and they're not, you know, passing new legislation. They're not earning their keep. So, you know, with great hue and cry, they said this is a terrible situation. We must initiate reforms. New regulations must be set in place, and off to the races, right?
Absolutely. So you have this, you know, gargantuan piece of legislation You know, and it was something that A&H got involved with in trying to craft the final bill. And luckily, we were able to make some changes because there were some fairly egregious infringements on, you know, compounding pharmacies and what they could do.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, other than giving people terrible spinal infections, what do compounding pharmacies do? What is their role in the ecosystem of complementary medicine in the United States?
Well, I mean, I think they play a very important role. You know, we've sort of developed this monoculture of medicine where, you know, we want to have some sort of, we put you in a category and then there's a standard of care that goes along with that category. And, you know, the problem many times is that we're all individuals. We have different biochemistries. We have different, you know, factors involved with our healthcare. And I think at its heart, compounding is about individualizing medicine. So being able to, you know, adapt a medication to fit a person's, you know, biochemistry. I mean, if I read the back of a bottle, it's going to be based upon some average size and all of these other factors that may or may not apply to me individually as a person. And, you know, with compounding, a doctor is able to tailor a treatment to a specific individual and, you know, and bring the best care possible. That seems like a good thing to me. And I think, you know, the more that we take these options off the table, the more we infringe on these, the more that we erode a doctor's ability to provide the kind of care that people have come to expect in this country.
Well, let me give you some examples. There are patients that I have who are suffering from celiac disease, extreme gluten sensitivity, and they require medications. But guess what? A high percentage of medications are made with starch, which is a source of gluten. So day in, day out, they take a half a gram or a gram of gluten, and this is going to make their condition continue. As careful as they might be with their diets, they won't be able to eliminate gluten because the medications that they may rely on, for one reason or another, some people need medications from time to time, contain gluten. So we can actually get a compounding pharmacy to create a custom medication that is gluten-free. It contains the active ingredient, but no starch filler, no contaminants. Here's another example. I have patients who have, for example, depression or anxiety. But the usual anti-anxiety medications that are available in standard doses make them feel like they're blown away. They just feel totally sedated you know, they have terrible side effects. So we can get a compounding pharmacy to make a dose that is half as strong or quarter as strong or 10% as strong as even the lowest dose of medication out there. And sometimes for many of our sensitive patients, that's what it takes. And that's why we have to go to compounding pharmacies sometimes. And, of course, for the intravenous materials that we use, some of the big pharmaceutical companies have now stopped making some of the essential nutrients that we give intravenously, things like intravenous vitamin C or intravenous magnesium or EDTA, which is used for chelation therapy. It's just, you know, they think it's small fry stuff, so they're not even bothering to manufacture it. And yet we can get compounding pharmacies to make it under careful conditions, you know, subject to inspection, good manufacturing processes and whatnot.
Yeah, and I think that's a fantastic example, and you know, it's something that you depend on in your practice, and doctors all over this country depend on, and people who are really sick, who have real needs, depend on this. And so, you know, some of the concerns we have, you know, the FDA. So the bill was passed, and now we've sort of entered the regulatory phase where they're putting forth the different rules that are going to come out of this legislation. And so one of the things that we're doing right now is taking a look at those rules and responding to it, giving our comments, our concerns about the way some of these rules are being implemented, because there are some issues with these new rules and some things that we think are of great concern both to doctors and to the patients that they care for.
Well, absolutely. So could there be consequences? Let's say the legislation is passed without input from A&H. I know A&H has already been successful at whittling down some of the more egregious provisions of that, but is it possible that patients who need these types of medications will be denied access, or the patients who need intravenous therapies won't be able to get the treatments that they require?
I think that's absolutely the case. You know, some of the things that are in the new regulations that we're concerned about, one of the big things is it's going to break compounding pharmacies into two different categories: custom compounders, which is sort of, you know, what compounding pharmacies currently are. It's a traditional compounding function. And then they've created this new category called outsourcing facilities. So these outsourcing facilities would be limited to a specific list of bulk ingredients, but they would have the ability to, you know, to sell these nationwide. So there would be no ban on wetware. They could sell their products. On the other hand, the custom compounders, there's going to be some serious limitations placed on where they're able to sell. You know, the current regulations state that they'll be able to sell 5% of their total sales out of state, unless they have a memorandum of understanding established with the FDA, which is a bit frightening, for the simple reason that, you know, if you're an individual living in an area where a custom compounder might be unavailable, you may only have access to one of these outsourcing facilities, which has a much more a limited list of available drugs for
right.
you.
So, I mean, say you live in Wyoming or Utah or one of the less populous states, there may not be a compounding pharmacy anywhere in the state that's able to fill your prescription.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's something we find, and we're preparing our comments on it, you know, right now, because we think this is a real danger for real people, particularly in the heartland. I think those are good examples. You know, when you're in New York City, this probably isn't going to affect you the same way.
Well, I'll tell you how it affects me in New York City, in spite of the fact that there are many compounding pharmacies in New York. My favorite compounding pharmacy is in the state of New Jersey. And, you know, I've come to rely upon them because they understand precisely the way I want the medications formulated. It's important to have for a doctor to have trust in the pharmacy that delivers pharmaceutical goods and IV materials to patients who are under their care. And I'm implicitly very, very dependent on this pharmacy in New Jersey. And if I weren't able to utilize their products, I would have to undertake a search of a more local source. You know, another area is the hormones, the bioidentical hormones, which are a mainstay of complementary and alternative therapy. Are they under threat under these new compounding regulations? Because you can't get, you know, a natural estrogen product from, you know, Pathmark or from Genovese or from, you know, any of the conventional pharmacies, Duane Reade, you know, and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, bioidentical estriol, that was one of the, you know, initially when the legislation came out, it was one of the things that we fought to protect and were able to successfully protect. But I think, you know, in the long term, because of the way this legislation has been crafted, you know, currently there's a banned ingredients list. So regardless of which category of compounding pharmacy you fit into, you're not able to use ingredients off that list for good reason for most of them. But there's a provision in the regulations that would allow the FDA to simply remove an ingredient at their own discretion. You know, one of these bulk drugs that people depend on, the FDA can come in and say, hey, you know what? We're not going to allow you to use this anymore. And that's a provision in these new regulations. And the scary part is that it wouldn't have to go through a public comment period. So they could do this arbitrarily, capriciously.
Right.
And really, we would have no way to fight that.
Essentially, what they're saying is, trust us, we're from the government.
Right. Exactly.
Famous last words.
Yeah.
Okay, so clearly, you know, A&H is working to craft a compromise. Obviously, there need to be more stringent rules to prevent a tragedy. Better quality standards need to be maintained by compounding pharmacies and fly-by-night outfits like that outfit in Massachusetts. Frankly, they need to be more carefully regulated or shut down altogether. But this is not the same type of pharmacy that complementary physicians like myself use. I'd never even heard of that pharmacy in New England, and they get in trouble not providing a product to holistic doctors or complementary physicians, integrative practitioners, but they ended up wholesaling massive amounts of a steroid injectable, something that I never use in patients, and certainly I wouldn't inject into a patient's spinal cord.
Right, exactly. I mean, and I think the problem is that too often when the government gets involved, the knee-jerk reaction is, as you said earlier, to create new legislation. In the case of the New England Compounding Center, it is simply a case of lack of enforcement of the current laws. I mean, the laws were in place to protect citizens. The FDA just did not do their job. And, you know, I mean, part of that comes from funding. You know, there are a number of reasons why the FDA does not enforce the law the way that they need to. But sometimes, you know, when you go to fix a problem, it doesn't help to create a whole stack of new laws that they're going to do an inadequate job of enforcing. And unfortunately, in this case, it seems to be the way we're going.
Okay, this is a good point at which to pause, because we separate our podcast into two parts. We're going to continue our discussion in just a moment with Tim Rhyme. He's Director of Communications and Outreach at the Alliance for Natural Health, ANH-USA. They've got a great website at ANH-USA.org. Is that correct, Tim?
That is correct.
And we will continue with part two in just a moment. And in part two, we're going to take up a surprising initiative by a third-year medical student to shut down medical free speech. He's targeting Dr. Oz. He thinks Dr. Oz needs to be muzzled. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.